Welcome, fans of Man of Steel, to the Justice League Universe podcast, where we analyze the DC films produced by Warner Brothers Studios, and soon by HBO Max. You can follow the show on Twitter at JLU Podcast. My name is Alessandro. In this episode, we analyze the scene where Jonathan and young Clark have moved into the barn, and Jonathan reveals the escape pod and what he knows about Clark's alien origins, which of course is not very much, and Clark will later need to have a fuller revelation in the scout ship from his biological father. These early portions of the movie largely focus on Clark asking questions and trying to find his place in the world. In the flashbacks, we see him literally asking some of those questions, like, "What's wrong with me?" to his mom in the school scene, and "Did God do this to me?" to his dad in the previous scene. And with adult Clark, he doesn't explicitly ask as many questions, but we can see already that he is still roaming around and trying to figure out where he fits in. It's clear he wants to help, but it's not clear how he can do that in today's society before any notion of a superhero yet exists. In this scene, he will get a little bit of an answer, but it's an answer that actually just leads to more questions and a deeper sense of being different from everyone else. Luckily, he has very loving parents to stay with him through these challenges, with that unconditional love that we talked about in the last episode. So for this scene, we start with a nearly all-black shot with a ray of light breaking through the slits of the cellar door. That door is then opened by Jonathan using a pulley system, which is no doubt intended to convey the difficulty one would have in simply opening the doors. This helps to emphasize the level to which Jonathan hid its contents. The hidden escape pod beneath the barn is, of course, a staple of many versions of the Superman story. But even when approaching a common part of the story, Zack Snyder puts elements of his own style onto it. In this case, there is the lighting of the scene, where very often the source of the light is actually on the screen shining into the camera, rather than the more common lighting coming from the sides above and from behind the camera. Right away in this scene, we have the sun shining toward the camera and into the cellar, illuminating the contents of the barn's underground storage space as the doors are opened. This lighting and visual transition is symbolic in that Clark has been in the dark about his origins, having had only hints of what he is from the emergence of his extraordinary abilities. And this scene, Jonathan will be shedding some light on Clark's past and what he is. In the next shot, rather than show Clark himself what's beneath the tarp, Jonathan allows Clark to see for himself. This fits with the parental motif of the Kents being there for Clark, but not directing him or being overly prescriptive. They support him in finding his own way. Jonathan tells Clark they found him in this, acknowledging he doesn't truly know what it is, and wisely doesn't attempt to guess, which could potentially mislead Clark, if he had. The darkness gives Dylan Sprayberry, the actor portraying young Clark, a bit of cover in how to react. It would be no doubt difficult to know how one would react to such a truly earth-rattling discovery. Jonathan continues by offering his and Martha's first assumption about the pod, conveying their certainty that the government would appear at their doorstep. This might be because they thought that the pod belonged to the government, like an experimental aircraft that was classified and went astray. Or they might have wondered if it was from another country, such as the Soviet Union, since they would have found it during the Cold War. And the US government would also be expected to come investigate any UFOs in American airspace. The notion that this could have been extraterrestrial in origin was probably not the first thing to cross their mind. Or, if it did cross their mind, they probably initially brushed that idea aside, especially because later we see that the world in general is still unaware of alien life. But of course, if they did think it was from outer space, even in that situation, they also would expect the government to come investigate or take Clark away. Clark looks closely at the outer workings of the pod, and the Kryptonian musical soundscape starts to roll in, serving as an audio connection back to the prologue. Overall, this is a really good use of the Clark musical theme. In the maybe scene outside, it was mostly the simple high piano theme, emphasizing his humanity. And now, in the barn, it expands into the Kryptonian parts of the theme, but still using those perfect fourths and perfect fifth intervals. We don't get a really clear look at the escape pod, but that makes sense for this scene because for Clark, too, he isn't going to perfectly understand everything in detail yet. This is more like just the shock of the revelation. And the scene is much more about the relationship between Jonathan and Clark, with some small pieces of exposition and explanation. The Kryptonian tech is just the context for the father-son interaction. And speaking of Kryptonian tech, Jonathan pulls out a box whose contents relate to the pod's functionality. And we learn later it's a command key, sort of like the Kryptonian equivalent to a USB jump drive. As Jonathan takes the item out of the box, and as he looks down at it, we can briefly see the background which contains newspaper clippings posted on the wall, some of which are on maps, which we can surmise are a product of Jonathan's reasonable paranoia of Clark's origins being discovered, and the government coming to take him away. And as it is unlikely that Jonathan would access this cellar very often given its sensitive contents and difficult accessibility, the books stacked on the desk are likely part of his research involving the pod, its contents, and its potential origins. Like many aspects of Zack Snyder's overarching Superman story, this too may be inspired by the graphic novel Superman Birthright by Wade Yu and Alan Guillen, in which Martha Kent monitors the news for stories that may be about her son. Jonathan hands the command key to Clark to examine, explaining that it was found inside the chamber of the pod with him. He tells Clark that he took it to a metallurgist at Kansas State, who had advised him that whatever it was didn't appear on the periodic table. This confirms that Jonathan has investigated and researched the alien ship. It also suggests that Jonathan must have suspected its extraterrestrial origins given his unusual inquiry into the material of the command key. This brief moment, though, is something that bothers Sam a little bit. Although it's just a quick beat meant to confirm for Clark that the ship is from another world, Sam happens to be a researcher at a university fairly close to Kansas State, and he knows that there's no way a university faculty member would confirm an extraterrestrial object and not report it to others and publish about it as a huge discovery, especially given the clear manufacturing of the command key complete with an artful symbol. It's impossible that Jonathan Kent would bring this discovery to the university and then be able to quietly come back home without the word spreading. Sam also wonders about the comment that the elements present in the command key are not on the periodic table. Meteorites can be identified as extraterrestrial because of the relative makeup of their material, their density, and their scorching from Earth entering the atmosphere, not because they contain completely different elements altogether. Sam realizes this is a fictional story, so they can make up whatever sort of chemistry they want for Krypton, including completely new atomic elements. But there are definitely some questions to be asked about this visit to Kansas State. As for me, perhaps I'm more amenable to people's ingrained skepticism as a realistic explanation for why Sam's concerns did not manifest in this story. Claims that proof of aliens exists are quickly dismissed, especially without the actual proof itself, in this case the command key. Any lab results could easily be dismissed as a hoax. Without Jonathan's backing, it's just one person's loony ravings that jeopardize their career. But anyway, the film was clearly drawing more from the comic books than from university material science departments. In addition to the Superman Birthright comic book, there are also many connections to Superman Earth 1. And while Man of Steel and Batman v Superman borrow heavily from both of these comic book stories, Man of Steel not only draws inspiration, but is arguably an adaptation of Superman Earth 1, while Batman v Superman can be considered a partial adaptation of Superman Birthright, though with many liberties taken, of course. With regard to the command key, Jonathan Kent having it analyzed is directly out of Superman Earth 1. In both that comic and this film, it's the moment Clark learns he's not of this Earth, when Jonathan tells him the object is not from this world and that neither was Clark. Jonathan continues here, trying to give meaning to Clark, rather than leave him feeling ostracized. He says that Clark is the answer to are we alone in the universe? This is somewhat of an answer to all those questions we referred to in this act of the film, But this statement no doubt makes Clark question if he had some other parents somewhere out there, or if there is a whole world with people of his kind. After all, if Earth wasn't alone, that had to mean there were other inhabited planets. This sets up nicely the direction in which the film heads toward. But while Jonathan's words may have been chosen to emphasize Clark's importance, they also seem to be meant as a comfort to suggest Clark wasn't alone either. After all, he has Jonathan and Martha, and thanks to Clark's arrival, they were no longer alone and childless. Not wanting to be different and have such weight on him, the young boy that he is, Clark responds to being called the answer to "Are we alone?" by saying he doesn't want to be. Jonathan naturally understands Clark's feelings and empathizes, saying he doesn't blame him, elaborating that it would be a huge burden for anyone to bear. This helps Clark to not be ashamed of his feelings. But he expounds the significance of Clark's origins in two ways. First, by emphasizing he isn't just anyone, meaning he isn't like everyone else on the planet, both because of his extraterrestrial origin and because of the extraordinary power he possesses. And second, by sharing his inescapable belief that Clark was sent here to Earth for a reason. Those two points converge as Jonathan continues by suggesting Clark will one day view these changes he is going through, namely the manifestation of his abilities, as a blessing, supposing them to be valuable in whatever fate has in store for him and our world in the future. His use of the word blessing is interesting given its religious implications. It connects to Clark's previous quandary about whether God did this to him, and his continued open-mindedness toward religion when he is older and seeks advice from a pastor. Jonathan explicitly raises the theme of choice, inherent in his parental guidance, as we mentioned in our previous episode. Jonathan says that when the day comes where he appreciates his innate abilities, Clark will have to make a choice. Will Clark stand before the human race proud of his roots and his unique abilities? In other words, essentially not being afraid or ashamed of his differences. This strikes at the core of any immigrant story. As Jonathan established in the previous scene, people are afraid of what they don't understand. This includes other cultures and peoples. Immigrants constantly struggle with trying to fit in so as not to be looked down upon or ostracized, and remaining true to their heritage no matter the adversity and xenophobia they face. Zack Snyder honors the heart of Superman's story throughout his DC films by making this migrancy a focus. That Jonathan poses this choice to Clark, and worded it in a way that leans toward revealing himself when the time is right, should have redressed anyone's concerns during the previous scene that Jonathan might have been advocating for Clark to remain hidden and not embrace all the good he could do with his abilities. And that criticism of Jonathan's parenting in this film that still exists today reflects a lack of attention or understanding the role as a whole. In a really emotional reaction when faced with these daunting revelations, Clark asks if he could just keep pretending he's Jonathan's son. This is no doubt a very personal scene for Zack Snyder, who has adopted children, and for writer David Goyer, who is also an adoptive father. And this sentiment by Clark is most certainly a common sentiment for children who first learn they are adopted and feel confused, abandoned, and scared. It can be staggering news that causes you to question everything you know and believe. For Clark, this news of not being Jonathan and Martha's biological child is part of the even greater revelation of not even being from this planet. This makes this moment far more traumatic, and Clark is desperate to retain some consistency within his life as he must be questioning how much of it has been a lie. What is he to these people who have acted as his parents, if not their child? Jonathan is quick to reassure Clark, feeling his pain and emotion, by affirming that he is his son and by embracing him in a very fatherly way. And more importantly, all through this scene, Jonathan has continuously said "son" at the end of his sentences to reassure Clark of his love for him and keep him grounded to the reality that this information doesn't change what he is to them, family. Jonathan's maybe in the previous scene to whether Clark should have let the children die showed the tough and honest truth about moral dilemmas. But there is no doubt here, "You are my son." These relationships are the certainties that can guide you through the dilemmas and complexities of life. This exchange in which Clark wishes he wasn't different and just wants to be Clark Kent, Jonathan and Martha Kent's son, with Jonathan then reaffirming that he is their son, was inspired by a similarly developed chapter from Superman Secret Origin. Anyone who scorns the emphasis placed on the alien angle of Clark's story seemed to have overlooked this comic book story written by Geoff Johns, who was the chief creative officer of DC at the time of Man of Steel's release. And Johns' Secret Origin was released in 2009 before Zack Snyder had even been hired to direct Man of Steel. In a way, the assault on Zack Snyder's Superman by self-proclaimed fans and critics alike who advocate for what they describe as a version that is more of a happy-go-lucky everyday guy is a form of whitewashing. It belies the very things that at their core define Superman and, equally as important, make him interesting in our opinions. Immigration, adoption, moral ambiguity, self-doubt, choice, and repercussions, these are everyday matters. No one is perpetually happy. That way of looking at Superman depicts him more as a god, something he's not, and which Lex proves in the follow-up to his film. After assuring Clark that he's still his son, that nothing has changed in that regard, and that even amidst all this tumultuous information, Clark will still have the unconditional love of his parents, remember, Zack Snyder has said that part of this film is showing that parental love is even stronger than superpowers. But after assuring Clark, Jonathan elaborates on what has changed. Clark has a father in addition to him who gave him another name, and hence another identity that is also part of what defines who he is. It's the part of him that Clark will need to learn more about to get the answers to the rest of the questions he's asking. And in order to do that, Clark will need to know the reason that his father sent him to Earth. Jonathan puts so much importance on this that he tells Clark that even if it takes him the rest of his life, he owes it to himself to find out what that reason is. We will see in the conclusion of the film that this becomes integral to Clark's character evolution and to his story. It is by that reason, understanding where he comes from and the people he left behind, that Kal-El later makes the self-defining choice to destroy the Genesis Chamber, hence embracing his humanity. And it does go through the rest of his life as Kal-El continues to define himself through his choices in BVS and Zack Snyder's Justice League. There is a bit of a nuance here with regard to Clark's choices. So clearly this scene fits with the larger theme of choice and free will that was set up explicitly in the Krypton prologue, and which will show up in big ways as Clark has to choose when to reveal himself, whether to save his father, and when Superman has to choose whether to turn himself in and whether to kill Zod. But this scene in the barn also includes ideas about things that are beyond choice. For example, Clark did not choose to be this superpowered being or to be sent to Earth. He did not choose to be found by the Kents. And Jonathan also talks about Clark being sent here for a reason, which has overtones of a sort of divine mission or predetermined fate. But this does not conflict with the themes of choice. There are always limits to choice, and people do not choose who they are simply by being born, and do not have choice about most of what happens to them as children. But part of growing up is a process of recognizing where you do have choice and what the repercussions of those choices are. And with regard to Jor-El having an overarching purpose for sending Kal-El to Earth, the interesting thing is that Jor-El's hope for Kal-El is that he actually has the freedom to define his own path. That's why it was important for him to be sent out to a fresh start away from the restrictions of Kryptonian society. Jor-El doesn't want Kal-El to totally reject his Kryptonian heritage. That's why Jor-El does send the command key with him. But Jor-El wants him to forge his own way as a potential bridge between worlds, and Kal-El having agency in defining what it means to be that bridge. And we see that process of him figuring it out over the course of the full Dawn of Justice trilogy. Speaking of Jor-El, we don't know it yet, but Jor-El's consciousness is actually embedded in that command key that Clark looks down at, and it will be the key later to Clark getting more of the answers he's looking for. Unfortunately, it will take him many more years before he will be able to access its information. We want to close by looking at both of these connected scenes, the maybe scene and the you are my son scene here. From these scenes, we get a great deal of insight into Jonathan's parental guidance. At the heart of what Jonathan teaches Clark are the Delphic maxims. They were said to have been given by Pythia, the oracle of the Greek god Apollo's, and were therefore attributed to Apollo. Apollo, as most people know, is the Olympian god of the sun. We already explored Superman's relation to the sun god in our Batman v Superman analysis, so it is very fitting that Jonathan, as an oracle to Clark, teaches him these sort of rules to live by. More specifically, however, these two scenes focus on the three maxims inscribed in the Temple of Apollo at Delphi. They are, know thyself, nothing to excess, and surety brings ruin. In telling Clark that he should find the reason his other father sent him to Earth, even if it takes the rest of his life, he is guiding Clark toward a path of knowing himself. Because if he doesn't pursue these answers, he will always have questions about who or what he is. To know thyself is to know one's place in the great order of things. By teaching Clark restraint, he is instilling in Clark the cardinal virtue of temperance. With this, one can stand above one's thoughts, passions, and actions and moderate them. This is especially important to one with such supernatural powers, as highlighted in Batman v Superman's nightmare vision of the future. Finally, Jonathan's maybe exemplifies the principle of philosophical skepticism. By not committing to a potentially wrong answer, he is teaching Clark to beware false certainty. Socrates insisted that if he was wise, it was only because he recognized his own ignorance. He sought to expose the perils of false opinion, seeing it as one of the fundamental problems of human nature and society. Socrates has a point, given all the unwarranted hate Man of Steel received by those who failed to look beyond the surface. We see powerful performances by both actors in these scenes, but especially by the incredibly talented Kevin Costner, who we believe was simply perfect casting. Of course, Zach's casting choices all around seem pretty spot on. The delivery of the line, "You are my son," is especially commendable. Costner's voice nearly cracks and sounds as if he nearly starts crying at the thought of Clark feeling he isn't Jonathan's son. A final observation before we wrap up this episode. In this scene, we saw Clark struggling with being different and of alien origin. He resents it and just wants to be normal like everyone else. Although Zack Snyder's cut of Justice League has yet to be released, we believe it's safe to conclude that the same sentiment will continue to apply to Cyborg. Something that caught our attention, which may be nothing, is that both Clark and Vic don a gray hoodie during their internal conflict with being of two worlds. A hood is used to cover up, perhaps a symbol of shame, embarrassment, or fear, and the color gray is neither black nor white, but somewhat of a blend of the two. We expect to notice a great many more thematic and symbolic similarities between the characters once we finally devour the 4-hour epic that awaits us. Thanks for listening to this analysis of Scene 16 of Man of Steel, a scene that furthers our understanding of Jonathan as a father and his importance in Clark's evolution to become the Superman we love. In the next episode, we'll return to present day and see how an adult Clark deals with bullying. Feel free to show your support and desire for more content by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/JLUpodcast.